listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. This is Zach Gandra, back with the inimitable Steve Gandra. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm inimitable.
You're inimitable.
I finally decided to quit arguing with you about that adjective and own it.
Just own the uncopyable nature of
uncopyable, inimitable.
Of what and who is Steve Gandra.
Now let's talk about what's really important.
Well, let's talk about what's really important. We had a recent guest, Kate, am I saying it right?
Matsudaira. Yep.
From popforms.com.
Yeah, brilliant. That was an entrepreneur.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
What was your favorite part?
Well, my favorite part was how she got real with coaching employees who have bad bosses.
Yeah.
About doing something about improving themselves instead of griping about their bad boss and blaming the company.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of my favorite shows to date. Yeah, like
and really put action with it. I mean, she's got, you know, courses for, you know, how to manage your boss.
Yeah.
That I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
But, you know, great guest. Make sure you catch the podcast if you hadn't listened.
Yeah,
to it.
We haven't titled it yet, but by the time this airs, it will be titled, and you'll be able to find it really easily and just look for Pop Forms or Kate Matsudaira, and we'll go from there. Today, though, we have a reoccurring guest that we've had on the show before, and I'm personally stoked to have again. And Dr. Robert McKenna is with us again. And so, Dr. Robert, we're happy to have you.
Hey, it's good to be here, guys.
I'm doing the clap thing for everybody now. Yeah, Dr. Rob's with us.
Everybody calls clap him track. Rob. Zach calls you Dr.
Right now,
Robert.
If that helps.
What's that?
I'm bowing right now.
Oh, nice. Take your bows, my friend.
Are you at the university or are you in your man cave?
I'm in the man cave right now because all good things happen
yes,
here.
Yes, they do. That's awesome.
So just a reminder, Dr. Rob McKenna, we're not talking to the politician Rob McKenna, which is a name that often comes up frequently when you search for this Rob McKenna, but we're talking to Seattle Pacific University PhD.
MBA
extraordinaire.
Video game extraordinaire.
If there's anybody that could wear a cape on a campus, it should be this.
Yeah, he could do it. Well, but I mean, I think Rob's, from my perspective as a coach of business leaders, Rob's position as the director of the Center for Leadership Research and Development at Seattle Pacific University is the role that, in my opinion, he and his colleagues, his professors and teachers and what is it now, 80 master's and doctorate level candidates or something like that, Rob, that you have in your program?
Yeah, at any given time, there's about that many running through.
Yeah, so these are industrial organizational psychology, which is not just general psychology. This is about business psychology and organizational transformation and development and leadership and all the stuff that really matters. 80 master's and doctorate level candidates that are studying under Dr. McKenna and his colleagues, in my opinion, one of the best kept secrets in leadership development on the planet.
Yeah.
How do you guys keep it so quiet?
They don't advertise with our show.
Yeah, there you go.
One
of our guests is now a participant in that program.
Tony Pizzolo.
Tony Pizzolo is now
getting his doctorate in your program, Rob.
Yeah.
We had Tony on the show.
I tell our students that as they come into the program, that coming through the program will be one of the hardest things they'll ever choose to do because they do. It's such a rigorous process, but at the same time, the training that they receive, I also call them the CIAs, the CIA agents of corporate America, because in many ways, because they're getting this training in all things related to behavior inside workplaces, that they have a tremendous opportunity to have influence on really impacting the way that people feel about themselves, feel about their work, feel about their leadership within all kinds of different places. So it's been amazing to be a part of a program like this and what I now describe as more of a community of people who are, trained through this rigorous process, but they're just outstanding human beings.
Well, when you have a CEO like Tony was on our show not long ago and just a brilliant leader, CEO of a insurance and benefits firm, Pacific West Financial, who decides as a part of his own career development to go back, and get a doctorate in industrial organizational psychology in your program and selected your program out of any in the country. You know, and Tony is an adjunct professor and has taught courses in economics and just about everything on the planet under the business side. I mean, it, to me, that speaks louder than words.
Yeah, and he's an example of so many just outstanding kinds of people that are coming to study as a part of what we're doing. So it's been really fun to watch this thing grow and the impact it's already having. So, yeah, it's been good, guys.
Rob, tell us what else you're doing outside of professorship.
Well, I just I can't help but mention this. I just got back from a trip to India and had the opportunity to take five of our students, a couple of doctoral students and three master's students, along with a fellow named Dr. David Goodnight, who's an attorney from here in Seattle. And it was just such an amazing trip. We had 10 days there partnering with a university that's been started, and all the students are being trained as business students, but all the students are from what's described in India as the untouchable population.
Hmm.
So they're all people who exist outside of the caste system. And it was just unbelievable to see this place and the courage of these leaders who have started a program in a school, an entire university that's specifically focused on educating folks like that, and then giving them opportunities to plant themselves in major corporations. And we were just so profoundly impacted by our experience there. And I was, again, back to the program, I was so proud of what our students were able to accomplish on the ground. But just to hear the inspiring stories of these people who never would have had opportunities in business, who now are going to have those opportunities. And so I'm coming off, I mentioned that just because I'm coming off this trip and feeling pretty high about my own convictions about the importance of developing the kinds of leaders that you and I would want to follow in business. Is something that just really was something that was driven into me even further, I think, during that trip. So that's one thing that's kind of fresh in my mind.
Well, before you move on, I think we need to highlight to the listeners, if they're at all engaged in what's going on the planet, India's class system is very archaic.
You're talking about the caste system or the class system?
Well, the caste system.
The caste, okay.
Caste system, yeah.
So, yeah, you're right.
And to hear of the work that you guys are doing over there is incredible.
Well, not exactly the fountain of human rights.
Right.
Right. And then, but in the power, of the, you know, the thing that we learned so much about there is that business is one of the most powerful vehicles that's really transforming the kinds of opportunities that people will have to change their lives. So that's one of the things with such a impressive thing to see, people who have the courage to really get education in the hands of the people who are way on the fringes. But you're exactly right, Zach, that there is it's a challenging place too.
Yeah.
Well, there's a number of reasons we wanted to have Dr. McKenna back on the show, but one of the reasons was before we go there, Rob, why don't you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what you've got going at the Center for Leadership Research and Development, and how, you know, leaders who are listening to the show can plug into your resources, can benefit from what you're doing. You know, I especially love your online tools that leaders can go online and assess themselves as a leadership development activity that is pretty self-directed, but takes advantage of the years and years and years of research that you put into maximizing high-performance leadership. Tell us some more about the center and the work that you're doing there.
Okay. Well, I mean, the first thing, I think, like most of us, I'm a bit of a mutt because I have this academic side of myself, but I'm also a business person and someone seeking to create sustainable, scalable resources and also to really help people build their businesses and to do that in a way that they feel like is the right thing to do. And so, you know, we've been doing research for now what's almost 15 years on the developmental journey of leaders and trying to understand, you know, you think about each one of us, that each one of us is kind of on this developmental path where we're trying to figure out not only how to work, how to lead well in our businesses, how to follow well, how to create successful, you know, financially sustainable and successful businesses, but like to your expertise, you guys, you know, around building cultures where other people can build sustainability and engagement in their own lives. So we've been doing research on leaders specifically, primarily because, you know, when people step into the role of leader, and I would describe that as people who are responsible for the work and development of someone else.
Okay.
That as soon as you get yourself into a role where you're not only responsible for your own work and development, but you're now responsible for the work, the development, possibly the livelihood of lots of other people. That anybody who's in that kind of a role understands that all the questions change. The challenge becomes so significant because you're trying to figure it out for yourself, but at the same time be connected and caring about the people that are around you. And so we've been just deeply invested in doing research on how people learn and grow on the job and across different areas of their lives, and creating tools and resources that would help them get real about those different challenges, that would help them be better leaders in their businesses, but also be better leaders in their homes and across different places of their lives. So we've been building based on this what's now decades of research, because it's not just our research alone. We know a lot about how people learn and grow through their work. And so we've been developing, adding to that list of tools that are out there to help people get intentional and to get real about, you know, the kind of the, I describe it almost as the developmental tapestry or quilt. My sister's a big quilter, so I'm big on the quilt metaphor right now. But that makes up the patchwork of your life and how those things play together so to help you lead more effectively. If that makes sense. But
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's extremely awesome.
We got to go into our first break, guys. We're going to be right back with Dr. Rob McKenna on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentculture.com. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We're back on Excellent Cultures. Biz Culture Matter, Clay 1180 AM with Dr. Rob McKenna, the director of the Center for Leadership Research and Development at Seattle Pacific University. Before we got to the break, I was talking about one of the reasons that we wanted to have Rob back on the show, because this is his second visit, and we're going to have him back again because the subject that we're going to talk about today is extremely enlightening and very, very much in demand in the marketplace. We come off of a season where the recent Gallup poll tells us once again, 2 years later, that we still have 70% disengaged workers in our country. And only a new statistic this year is that 18% of those disengaged workers actually tell the Confidential poll that they hate their job. The most common reason for hating their job is they hate their boss. And Jim Clifton, the CEO of Gallup, is quoted in his cover memo for the Gallup research poll as labeling this new generation of leaders, this new generation of managers, as the managers from hell. And Rob is probably the smartest guy that we know on the subject of the antithesis of generating and creating the opposite. Do we call those managers from heaven? Managers from heaven. So we wanted him to, you know, give us some general comments on, you know, his expertise, because he's just, you know, a walking encyclopedia of leadership development, leadership improvement, and, you know, what works and what doesn't work, and how do you maximize the effectiveness of the process. We've been doing, as most of you know, a series of blog articles on the Seahawks Super Bowl winning culture. We had, you know, this recent, you know, phenomenal victory that surprised everybody, with the exception of the Seahawks themselves and their leaders and their teammates, you know, with an overwhelming victory, and with a culture.
A smashing.
Yeah, a smashing victory. Just a smashing victory. You know, with the culture that is not exactly what you would expect from a typical bravado NFL football team. And so we've identified these six characteristics that, you know, Rob in so many of his assessments measure with his instruments and with their research. But these six characteristics that were demonstrated by the Seahawks that depict their culture that are not your typical kind of, you know, bravado, you know, competitive, we're studs and you're losers kind of a mindset. That I want Rob to comment on. And I want to start this section, which is about humility, which is a characteristic that, you know, Rob has emphasized, you know, in your book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very much so in your book, you know, on you know, on dying to lead, which we'll want you to talk about here in a second. But this characteristic of humility, I want to start off by reading three quotes, one from head coach Pete Carroll, that he gave right after the victory. You know, he said, "This is an amazing team. I'm so proud to be part of them and the work that John has done to put this together," referencing John Schneider, the Seahawks general manager. The second one is from the Super Bowl MVP, Malcolm Smith. "I'm just here to represent the defense. Honestly, I'm here, but it's definitely on behalf of them." And then the third one, wide receiver Jermaine Kearse, on his amazing touchdown catch and run, "Just trying to make a play for the team." So here you've got these high-performance athletes and a high-performance coach giving credit to somebody else. How does that fit within the context of leadership and effectiveness? And, you know, is this kind of a weird new trend that these guys have, you know, stumbled on, or is it powerful and sustainable, Rob?
Yeah, you know, the first thing you made me think of, Steve, is you know, if you don't believe how humble I am, then just ask me. Because I think it's humility is such a tricky thing, because, you know, it's not something that we can claim to have, but it's something that we know when we see it in other people. And, you know, when you were talking about the Seahawks, I am, you know, as excited as everybody in Seattle, so pumped. And I've seen so many quotes that have been so powerful that have not been about the win, but it's been about the character of the team. And I think that's what you're describing. That has been sort of this quiet storm of things coming together. You know, but what it also made me think about, when you think about this topic of humility or leading under, you know, what it means to lead when the pressure is highest on us.
There you go.
It made me think about all the hundreds of other coaches in the NFL. And I was thinking about the fact that, you know, one of the reasons that, and pressure is such an interesting thing to think about related to our leadership, is that, if you, like I was saying before, you know, all the questions change when you become a leader, but it also increases the pressure that's on us. And sometimes we don't really know what that pressure is doing to us. I met with a leader actually today, someone that I was coaching, and he said, you know, my approach to these difficult situations I'm facing right now, this was an executive, was what he was describing as trial by fire. It's like he's getting himself into these situations where he's just kind of trying things out. He was looking for, can you give me some place to sort of to dig my fingers into, a place where I can get a handhold so that I can go into these situations more effectively. And I was thinking that when I think about the Seahawks, you know, like the number of high-pressure situations, personal pressure situations that they must have faced all year long, but but all coaches and teams, especially, you know, the pressure is highest when we're losing.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yep.
And that's not necessarily true, but you know what I mean when people are going to have to make decisions moment by moment when they're trying to figure out where they're going to be playing next year.
Right.
Yeah.
As another example. And so I have tremendous, you know, I don't know the Seahawks coaches, but just tremendous respect for the way that they handle themselves. And one of the things I also always look for when it comes to building organizations that are what I would describe as these high-performing, high-development, high-stress, high-investment kinds of cultures, is that in places like that, you don't hear as much gossip.
Right.
And you don't hear players talking about each other behind their backs. And that takes a pretty strong and connected leadership to be able to build a place where people aren't triangulating all the time. You know what I mean? And you can see it, you know, because everybody's got that pressure to go and talk about everybody else when things go badly. It kind of reminds me of when the Mariners went on their big winning streak run a few years back.
2001. That was about the last time.
you remember that when they got that huge winning streak?
Yep.
You didn't hear anything from the locker room.
Right.
Yeah.
So there really wasn't that much to evaluate, but that was kind of the beauty of it. These guys were leading strong in the midst of that. I didn't have a chance to be in the locker room, but you can imagine what I'm talking about there.
So yeah. If you're, you know, listeners, if you're wondering about the fruitfulness of this kind of a culture, the culture where the dominant order of the day is supporting your team and passing credit for success along to teammates and to each other, let me read you the early quotes coming right after the game. John Fox, the head coach of the Denver Broncos, said, "We ran into a buzzsaw," quote, end quote.
Yeah.
And in, you know, in
hashtag 12th man.
Yeah, absolutely. Hashtag 12th man. And then Coach Carroll says, "We just played the way we always play." So The difference between running into a buzzsaw and just relaxed, comfortable, playing the way that you always play, passing the credit along to the players, passing the credit along to the coaches, you know, passing the credit along the general manager, even Paul Allen, the owner of the team, you know, his first words, you know, coming, you know, after receiving the Lombardi Trophy, passing the credit along to John Schneider and Coach Carroll. So, you know, in I know you're exceptional at, in your work, Rob, at you know, even with your badbobby.com tools, your assessment tools, and I want you to talk about those. You know, giving leaders the opportunity to assess how they function under pressure, you know, because most of us always respond the way we don't want when we're under pressure. But your tools are about identifying where we don't perform the way we like under pressure and changing that and improving that and refining it so that we get to a place where we can be like, you know, Coach Pete, you know, we just play the way we always play. No big deal, you know.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon at the
ballpark. We forget that took a few years for Seattle, for Pete to build that culture in Seattle, yeah.
Right, right. You know, it's interesting, Steve. One of the things I talk about is that in every organization, business, nonprofit, or a football team, that there are always at least two things going on. One of them is what I would describe as content-related challenges. And that's the win-loss column. It's the strategy that we put in place. It's the things that we write down that we're going to accomplish together. It's all the things we say about ourselves. It's our sales goals. It's all those kinds of hard numbers. But there's another piece going on in every business situation. You know, we saw it in our research over and over again. I see it when I talk to leaders, and it's what I would describe as the context. The emotional context of what's going on there. And it's, you know, I think it's exactly what you were describing when the Seahawks were, you know, when there's more wins in the win column than the loss column, that's a content issue. I can look at that and measure that. But you think about what it meant for each leader to show up and to manage themselves in the midst of every minuscule challenge that they faced is what I find so intriguing, because the content doesn't come to us unless we're able to lead well in the midst of that personal pressure we face. And we do this all the time. I mean, probably each of us could think about the last time we got an email where you felt sort of the emotional temperature gauge inside of you go up. where you felt this tension between, okay, this thing is, it might be challenging my identity, it might be challenging my job, it might be challenging my purpose in my work, whatever it is, it kind of is this moment where I've got a choice to make about how I'm going to manage myself, communicate back to this person, and at the same time, stay connected to them. And I think that's the thing sometimes that when it comes to leading under pressure, and the things that we've been trying to assess is there's a very basic thing going on inside of every leader every time the pressure goes up. And that basic thing is that they're trying to figure out, how do I stay true to what's important to me? How do I stay true to my, what I would describe as my convictions? How do I lead like I mean it? And at the same time, I've got to, how do I stay connected to all these stakeholders, some of whom are really mad at me right now? Mm-hmm. And it's that, how do I stay connected to all those convictions that are inside of them? And that's where, when you were talking about sacrifice, you know, what it means to be humble is that sometimes that means I'm going to make sacrifices that I won't necessarily ever see credit for. You know, that's why my heart goes out to try to encourage leaders who are really trying to work hard at holding on to themselves, leading strong. I call it convicted care. It's like leaders who have a sense of themselves, of what they want, and at the same time, they're caring deeply about the people that they're leading and willing to make little or large sacrifice, if necessary sometimes, to try to make it all work. And so what we do is we assess basically those two things, the extent to which someone has a sense of themselves and the extent to which they are connecting with the needs of other people, and then giving them strategies, things to work on that will allow them to do those two things at the same time.
It's beautiful. We got to go into our break, but Rob, just to highlight what you said, C.S. Lewis was quoted in saying, true humility is not thinking less of yourself, it is thinking of yourself less.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, guys, Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Clearly, you are plugged in because we got Dr. Rob. Hey, He is my dog.
One of his video game. He's my dog. One of his online, you know.
We've got to take a break.
Games is probably
We're dog. Over time. We're over time. We'll be right back. Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better. That politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure, you don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We're back at Excellent Cultures and Biz Culture Matters on Clay1180.com with Dr. Rob McKenna, the director of the Center for Leadership Research and Development at Seattle Pacific University. And before the break, Rob was talking to us about the, you know, we're looking at the characteristics of the Seahawk culture that come out in the fiber of who they are that have resulted in this phenomenal level of performance. And, you know, the first characteristic of the six that we've defined is humility. And Rob was talking to us about the difference between humility that is really soaked in that comes out as being humble when you're under pressure, because Rob's expertise to a large extent is in leading under pressure. So Rob, I want you to talk a little bit about, I remember when I first went into your site, badbobby.com, and signed up for the assessment tool. You know, my favorite assessment in all your assessments is leading on the leading under pressure assessment, because when I took it and got that little you know, wheel at the end of the assessment that showed me with data and numbers and measurement of, you know, where I really wanted to be and how I wanted my, you know, my leadership to flow compared to how it happened when I was under pressure, and what the reality of when I lost my cool, or when I lost my composure, or when I couldn't self-manage, I thought was just huge, especially within the context of what you and Zach just talked about before the break. You know, is it all about me, and is it self, or is it about managing me so that I can serve my teammates and, you know, get better performance? Talk a little bit about how you use the leading under pressure inventory to help leaders develop and improve and become better self-managers in that area.
Well, what's so, you know, kind of cool about this work is that whenever I get a chance to talk to groups of leaders about how they show up under pressure, I'm talking, the challenge is, which is kind of a cool challenge, is that I'm always talking to at least two different kinds of people. And what I mean by that is that some leaders have very strong convictions. I mean, a lot of leaders in business have been rewarded for their gut. You know what I mean? Like, they're rewarded because they know what they're about, they know what they want, and that's their habit under pressure is, like, when it gets tough, they're going to tell you exactly what's going to happen next.
Good instincts and just, you know, sheer courage.
And sheer courage, and they will tell you exactly what they want. Their challenge, those kinds of leaders, is sometimes staying connected to what everybody else wants, especially as the pressure rises. So in a lot of cases, I'm dealing with those kinds of strong leaders. And they have, the strength is, you know what to expect from them. But there's always this other group. I was working with an organization in the last few weeks, and it was a whole organization made up of people from this other side. And the other side is, you have some people who spend most of their time, when the pressure rises, focusing on what everyone else is thinking. And the benefit of people like that is they're actually connected to what everyone else is thinking. So which you have to have. Their problem is that you don't know where they stand. And so the leading under pressure inventory, the cool thing about this tool is what it does is it first off gives you a sense for which way you go. Do you get what I would describe as really tough and convicted? You know, you're going to lead like you mean it, especially when it gets tough for everybody or for you. Or are you a leader who tends to focus more on what everyone else, what's important to everybody else? Because from then, the advice is kind of simple. You know, if I can build up in you, if you're the second case where you're thinking about what everyone else is thinking about, I'm always telling leaders, what do you want? And when are you going to tell me what you want? I want to know where you stand. And for the other folks who already know what they want, this is what kind of shocks people. And the feedback that I give to, you know, executives like this is, I'll tell them, they'll be like, if you had one piece of advice to help me lead more effectively, because you already know I've got a strong set of convictions, I tell them is, shut up. I need you to stop talking. And that kind of shocks the other group, because they're all thinking, I can't believe you just said that to the CEO. But the power of that is those people look at me and go, I know I need to back off a bit. I need to stop talking. And so the tool basically gives you a way to understand what your tendency is and then identifies, based on our research, we looked at 11 different strategies that emerged from our research on what it is that allows people to do those two seemingly contradictory things at the same time. So what the tool does is it shows you the things that you do well, to help you maintain yourself and stay connected to other people. And the things that you could work on that probably will help you the next time you enter into one of those high conflict, high pressure, high anxiety situations.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that if you want to learn from the Super Bowl victory and the Seahawk culture and Seahawk leadership that created that, a great way to do that is with your self-management tools for leaders to develop, because when you can't answer those questions for yourself honestly and not see where you need to improve, and then taking these strategies that you've identified and developed and implementing them actually helps you lead in a manner that when you're under pressure, you get the outcome that you would have done, or the behavior or the result or the reflex action that you would have had if you were not under pressure and got what you really wanted instead of the reflex action when you're in the heat of the game. Is that a good way to say it?
That's absolutely right. And it takes, the one thing it takes is it takes a leader. It takes the person in each of us that's willing to get some feedback that's contrary to what's natural for us sometimes.
Yeah.
And an example of this was Doug Baldwin. Remember when we lost our first game, a quote that came out was, he said, "You win some, you learn some."
Yeah, not you lose some.
That was we're so used to hearing, you know, maybe it could be just a tagline, but to the extent that that was real for the Seahawks culture, it's not about winning some and losing some. It's about the fact that anytime you, no matter what the outcome, you have an opportunity to change something.
You learn.
You learn something from
it. Yeah, outstanding. So, best way to get connected with the course, just visit badbobby.com and sign up for the Leading Under Pressure inventory. Is that right, Rob?
That's right. And the feedback report is generated right there on the site.
Yeah. Can I
jump in real quick?
Go
Rob,
ahead.
Can I ask you a quick difference a quick question? Because you're also involved with real-time development strategies. You want to explain to the listeners the difference between badbobby.com and realtimedevelopmentstrategies.com?
Yeah, Real-Time Development Strategies is the name of the organization. Badbobby.com is one of our tools. It's the most comprehensive development tool that we have.
Perfect. Okay.
So Bad Bobby is what turns you into the real Bad Bobby if you do it well.
Exactly.
Did we highlight, sorry, I'm over here doing social media while you guys are talking.
You need to
I'm letting people know who we have on the show.
Bobby, who Bad Bobby really is.
Yeah, so tell, like, let everybody know where the name Bad Bobby came from.
So I just, it's my, this is crazy, you know, I'm a 45-year-old gamer, and when online gaming came out, some of my college friends had named me Bobby. They gave me the nickname, and I hated it. So I turned it into my Xbox gamer tag, and I thought, well, it's a little meaner if I call it Bad Bobby, but the shorter part of that story is that, you know, I wanted to develop a tool where people could really be themselves, could express and feel like this is their information, and whether you're a 45-year-old gamer or, you know, someone who's a musician and in your workplace, you're a dad, you're a mom, you're a daughter, you're a son, that you would be able to bring those multiple identities into one place to sort of take a holistic picture of who you are.
Yes.
And that's kind of the story behind
it. Or if you were a clinical psychologist instead of an industrial organizational psychologist like Dr. McKenna, you would probably say, this is Dr. Rob McKenna, MBA, PhD's alter ego, that comes out playing 12-year-olds, playing 12-year-olds, you know, in competitive.
How to stay humble.
I'm not going
to
lie. Beating up on 16-year-olds online at Call of Duty is not so bad sometimes. So, not going to lie.
Especially if you're a little frustrated with your own 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, before we go into our next break, shoot, I had it on the tip of my tongue, a question for Rob, and it totally slipped my mind.
Well, it'll come back to you. I got one.
Go for it.
So the next area that we're zeroing in on, the next characteristic, and by the way, listeners, if you want to catch this, just visit excellentcultures.com/blog. You know, this is in the culture blog. excellentcultures.com/blog, and you'll get a breakdown of all these quotes and characteristics, and then you want to visit badbobby.com in order to start assimilating them into yourself. So
okay, I'm gonna jump in because I remember what it was, and my questions take less time than yours do.
Wonderful. Go.
Okay, Rob, so a lot of your written work and what we've talked about today is leading under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you have a definition of pressure and or where you believe pressure comes from? Because not everybody feels pressure the same ways through the, you know what I mean?
Exactly. I think it's something that increases our level of arousability, our anxiety, our emotions, and we do deal with it differently. And for some of us, that's what I mean, where you don't become more emotional, but you become more convicted.
Yeah.
And so it's anything, that pressure that kind of pushes us into this place where we have a choice to make. You know, whatever it is, it's very closely associated with conflict.
Yeah.
You know, anytime, that's how most of us experience that pressure, is like something is challenging either where we want to go or what we're about or our ability to manage ourselves. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, Jack, no, it's really good. And I think it's good to define that, because sometimes, you know, I'll throw Steve under the bus for a minute, since he's standing right here, and we'll be transparent. He feels a lot of anxiety and stress on the road.
When you're backseat driving.
So I tend to just, as soon as if we're riding together, I kick him out of the front seat and I drive.
Because
I
can. Right. The best way to deal with that pressure is just say, you don't like the way I drive.
I do that too. Today I almost threw up. It was horrible. Okay, we got to go. We got to go to a break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Rob McKenna and Steve Gandra, the inimitable, on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull, and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation, and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategy for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome, because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We're back on Excellent Cultures and Biz Culture Matters, clay1180.com, with Dr. Rob McKenna, the director of the Center for Leadership Research and Development, Seattle Pacific University. And we're talking about leading under pressure and doing it in a manner that embraces these six characteristics that we've identified were so prominent in the culture that manifested in our Seahawks and brought us the Super Bowl. The next one, you know, we talked about humility, but the next one is the dichotomy that exists between confidence and arrogance in a pressure-driven situation. So, again, quoting, you know, Coach Carroll, his words so relaxed. Well, we just play the way we always play. Winning quarterback Russell Wilson says time and time again that his mantra is to believe in the talent that God has given you, even though you're only 5'11". So. Mm-hmm. How do we contrast that level of confidence, you know, believing in the talent that you have, even though you don't meet up with any of the standards that anybody says an NFL quarterback should have, or believing in the fact that, you know, your team is so good, we just have to be like we are, and, you know, we don't have to try hard, we don't have to brag, we don't have to talk trash about other people. We're just who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So what does the research say about that as a characteristic of leadership and culture, Rob? I think I'm kind of, you know, moving off of your Bad Bobby instrument into your book. I mean, listeners, if you haven't read Dr. McKenna's book on leadership, it's outstanding book on this whole subject of you know, leading under pressure and do it in a manner that, you know, the book is called Dying to Lead, Sacrificial Leadership in a Self-Centered World. That, you know, really, really addresses it. So if we've got someone like a Pete Carroll, who very much is a sacrificial, you know, leader, he's willing to put his ego aside, build the team, build the teammates, build everybody else, not Pete Carroll, and really makes it work. How come that doesn't work for everybody?
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny too is that, I describe to people that, you know, people follow conviction, and one of the things that I feel so strongly about is just because they're following someone's conviction doesn't mean that it's the person I should be following, and so conviction alone, you know, leading like I mean it, when I say things I mean them, is not enough for me to want to develop, you know, a generation of leaders who are going to be like that, because that's why I think in many ways bullies run our world. Because people want a sense of direction and where things are going. So if you can build up the kind of leaders that you're describing, Steve, people with a very strong sense of themselves, but also a willingness to pay the price if necessary. You know, it's one of the biggest, I think, places where I've been misunderstood is when you call your book, you know, the subtitle, Sacrificial Leadership in a Self-Centered World. You know, I don't know if most people get the title, but the main title is Dying to Lead. And my point was, you know, you've got to want it. You got to be dying to lead. And at the same time, be willing to die to lead. Like, are you willing to put yourself aside, like you're saying? And I think the reality is that that's a complex little recipe, because we're asking people to do things that are in the same moment building up of themselves and at the same time being willing to make certain sacrifices. And the thing is this, like, we have a lot of quotes about Pete Carroll. I mean, I don't know Pete. I love what he's accomplished, but I don't know him. And we have quotes about him and about the kinds of sacrificial statements he's made. But I was thinking about, that's why I'm drawn in. I always describe it as the other 80%. Like, most of us are going to have to make sacrifices that no one will ever know about. I've met with three different executives this week who told me about situations. These are people that I do some coaching with. And no one's ever going to know the places where they made a sacrifice that, well, actually could possibly damage them. But because, you know, sometimes they're protected by legal obligations. You know, it's just a complex thing. And I just want to encourage and build up leaders who are at least aware of the costs that may be there. You know, I mean, something like succession planning, we do that in business all the time where we build up the next generation of leaders. I mean, if you do succession planning well, in my mind, you're building up a generation of leaders who will be leading when you don't matter anymore. Yeah. It's not about your legacy. Do you know what I mean, you guys? It's like, we want to make building up successors about our legacy. And to do that well, you've got to get yourself out of it. I mean, I see organization after organization where the CEO is trying to make sure that the next generation does exactly the way they did.
Right.
And that's not really sacrificial. That actually has more to do with your ego. But you're going to be gone.
Right.
So what are you going to do to prepare those people to lead well? And what sacrifices are you willing to make in your ego and even your ownership in the business sometimes? Because when it gets down to finances, you know, we can talk about sacrifice all day long, but, you know, until it gets into those things we hold really sacred, like money, it's challenging. So what I'm encouraged by is I've been surrounded by these leaders who are really interested in that. How do I lead strong and at the same time be willing to sort of calculate the cost and pay them sometimes if necessary?
Well, and two, I was chatting with one of my personal leadership coaches last week, and he kept saying leadership is more and more like being the Wizard of Oz. You're behind the curtain. Nobody knows you. Nobody sees you. But then the positive addition to that would be he was talking about where people are, you're essentially leading in such a manner or serving your people in such a manner that they're coming to these conclusions and they believe that they've come to them by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And not because of you or because of your direction or because of whatever. And I'm like, that's it. Like, that's truly, truly, true leadership is actually more behind the scenes than it is up front.
I know, and this is, it's getting kind of heavy, but I saw this in India. You know, I see with these people ask the question, why would it be dangerous for certain leaders to start a university that's going to educate people outside the caste system? And I don't know the full answer to
and
that.
And that's dangerous in that culture. That's dangerous in that culture.
Oh, it's dangerous for the people who have power.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why the leaders who actually have the courage to do that, they're putting so much on the line that they may or may not ever be remembered for. And that's why I just came out away from there so encouraged by the business leaders I get to work with here who understand that.
So let's talk a second about, you know, the deep character that will come out the same under pressure as when you're not under pressure, revisiting our Super Bowl winning culture with the Seahawks. The media didn't really hit this really, really hard, but there was a small story about the day before the game in the hotel when everybody would think that folks are focused and intense and, you know, coaches are just, you know, busting their mind to figure out what do I say, how do we do, how do we maximize, how do we give it all. Pete Carroll's in the lobby of the hotel playing with a bunch of kids, mm-hmm. you know, playing with children. Now, you know, okay, so now we know that if he can relax and play with children at a time like this, that there's something going on inside that doesn't have him all stressed out and tense about the practice. Or maybe that's kind of his unconscious therapy. You know, go play with kids and you won't be stressed out and intense.
Yeah.
But you know, whether it's one or the other, and, you know, Pete may not even know this himself, if we're not careful, corporate executives and managers and leaders who look at that can adapt this new strategy of, okay, the best way to win, you know, win big is to go spend more time playing with kids. And then they go, you know, to the local playground and volunteer to play time, you know, with kids, and they're bored and they're looking at their watch and text messaging, you know, back to the office the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So much is lost by leaders looking at surface characteristics instead of developing, you know, the deep stuff. So give us a little, you know, because I, you know, one of the things we love about your work, Rob, is that you're all about the deep stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. sacrificial leadership is not, you know, a cute technique that you grab hold of and say, this is the flavor of the month or the flavor of the year, or we're going to do this around here for a while. It's something that you live. I mean, what comes out in the Bad Bobby leading under pressure instrument is, you know, what do you really do, you know, when all of the guns are pointed at you and the game is on the line, and mm-hmm. it's one of those, you know, career limiting situations that if you're not careful and you go left instead of right, everything could be over. So you know how do we get this to the deep level where it happens sustainably and consistently and not just a fancy manipulative tactic?
You know, everything I know about the Seahawks, I mean, from just watching the press, because again, I'm not connected into the coaching staff, you know, and even watching Russell Wilson and some of the other players, is that I really do believe this, that if they had lost that Super Bowl, that they would have handled it the same way. There's a sense in me, if to the extent that I have any discernment at all in how people show up, even if it is sort of a, you know, in pop culture, that I really believe that might be true, that they would have handled it the same way.
Well, they did handle the losses that they had the same way, with the exception of what you commented earlier.
Yeah.
That in one case, it was a learning moment, and the other case, you know, it was a winning moment.
Right, right. And I think, it'll, you know, the test of some of that deeper stuff you're talking about is, what if they go into the losing season next? I mean, people in Seattle are going to hate me right now. But, you know, but if,
right.
if that happens, I always think about when I go through the airport, and you walk up to the security, and they ask you for ID. They ask you for your driver's license and your ticket. And I don't know why. This is the weirdness of my brain. But when I pass on my ID, I think to myself, so is my identity wrapped up in this little piece of plastic? Like, you trust me to get on a plane because of some stamp? And is everything that I'm wrapped up in, you know, based in, that's that issue of character. It's like, if someone were to ask you for ID that really represented who you are, what would you give them? you know, what would represent the character of who you are? Would it be, you know, how many wins in the win column or the losses in the left column? You know, I think that it's interesting to think about, and I think to the extent that we define ourselves by those kinds of things, man, we get into risky situations with leaders. Because that's what I always tell all of our students who are in this developmental process, is like every single one of them is going to fail miserably.
Yeah.
And so what is it that's going to sustain them? What questions do they need to ask? What kind of support do they need to get around them so that they have a sort of taken the best shot at having a holistic picture of who they are that transcends those wins and losses?
That's huge.
And that's the kind of person I want to follow, is someone who gets that complexity. And that's what we've done, is build tools. Like, that's why the Leading Under Pressure Inventory is one of six different assessments, to not just get people thinking about these high pressure situations, but also something like, you know, what are you about? Who are you? Who supports you? Who's got your back? Do you have a strategic network of people who help to define you better than you could by yourself? I don't know, Steve, that's kind of wandering around.
No,
but
it's huge.
You know how important that is.
And it's a good place to end, because we are completely out of time.
Well, we're going to have Rob back.
We'll have Rob back again
very soon.
You guys have been listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 and excellentcultures.com. Check out Dr. Rob McKenna at badbobby.com and
the Center for Leadership Research and Development.
Come on, guys. You got to be clear with that. We're out. We'll be back. See ya.